Chapter 72. Feeling that darkness would soon come on, and she must put off finding the pool till tomorrow, and make her way to some shelter for the night. She had quite lost her way in the fields, and might as well go in one direction as another, for aught she knew. She walked through field after field, and no village, no house was in sight. But there, at the corner of this pasture, there was a break in the hedges. The land seemed to dip down a little, and two trees leaned towards each other across the opening. Hetty's heart gave a great heat as she thought there must be a pool there. She walked towards it heavily over the tufted grass, with pale lips and a sense of trembling. It was as if the thing were come in spite of herself, instead of being the object of her search. There it was, black under the darkening sky. No motion, no sound near. She set down her basket, and then sank down herself on the grass, trembling. The pool had its wintry depth now. By the time it got shallow, as she remembered the pools did at Hayslope, in the summer, no one could find out that it was her body. But then there was her basket she must hide that to. She must throw it into the water, make it heavy with stones first, and then throw it in. She got up to look about for stones, and soon brought five or six, which she laid down beside her basket, and then sat down again. There was no need to hurry, there was all the night to drown herself in. She sat leaning her elbow on the basket. She was weary, hungry. There were some buns in her basket three, which she had supplied herself with at the place where she ate her dinner. She took them out now, and ate them eagerly, and then sat still again, looking at the pool. The soothed sensation that came over her from the satisfaction of her hunger, and this fixed dreamy attitude, brought on drowsiness, and presently her head sank down on her knees. She was fast asleep. When she awoke it was deep night, and she felt chill. She was frightened at this darkness, frightened at the long night before her. If she could but throw herself into the water. No, not yet. She began to walk about, that she might get warm again, as if she would have more resolution then. Oh, how long the time was in that darkness! The bright hearth and the warmth and the voices of home, the secure uprising and lying down, the familiar fields, the familiar people, the Sundays and holidays with their simple joys of dress and feasting, all the sweets of her young life rushed before her now, and she seemed to be stretching her arms towards them across a great gulf. She set her teeth when she thought of Arthur. She cursed him, without knowing what her cursing would do. She wished he too might know desolation, and cold, and a life of shame, that he dared not end by death. The horror of this cold, and darkness, and solitude out of all human reach became greater every long minute. It was almost as if she were dead already, and knew that she was dead, and longed to get back to life again. But no. She was alive still, as he had not taken the dreadful leap. She felt a strange contradictory wretchedness and exultation. Wretchedness, that she did not dare to face death. Exultation, that she was still in life, that she might yet know light and warmth again. She walked backwards and forwards to warm herself, beginning to discern something of the objects around her, as her eyes became accustomed to the night, the darker line of the hedge, the rapid motion of some living creature, perhaps a field mouse rushing across the grass. She no longer felt as if the darkness hedged her in. She thought she could walk back across the field, and get over the stile. And then, in the very next field, she thought she remembered there was a hovel of hers near a sheepfold. If she could get into that hovel, she would be warmer. She could pass the night there, for that was what Alick did at Hayslope in lambing time. The thought of this hovel brought the energy of a new hope. She took up her basket and walked across the field, but it was some time before she got in the right direction for the stile. The exercise and the occupation of finding the stile were a stimulus to her, however, and lightened the horror of the darkness and solitude. There were sheep in the next field, and she startled a group as she set down her basket and got over the stile. and the sound of their movement comforted her, for it assured her that her impression was right. This was the field whereas he had seen the hovel, for it was the field where the sheep were, right on along the path, and she would get to it. She reached the opposite gate, and felt her way along its rails, and the rails of the sheepfold, till her hand encountered the pricking of the gorsy wall. Delicious sensation! As he had found the shelter, she groped her way, touching the prickly gorse, to the door, and pushed it open. It was an ill-smelling close place, but warm, and there was straw on the ground. Hetty sank down on the straw with a sense of escape. Tears came as he had never shed tears before, since she left Windsor, tears and sobs of hysterical joy, that as he had still hold of life, that she was still on the familiar earth, with the sheep near her. The very consciousness of her own limbs was a delight to her. She turned up her sleeves, and kissed her arms with the passionate love of life. Soon warmth and weariness lulled her in the midst of her sobs, and she fell continually into dozing, fancying herself at the brink of the pool again, fancying that as he had jumped into the water, and then awaking with a start, and wondering where she was. But at last deep dreamless sleep came. Her head, guarded by her bonnet, found a pillow against the gorsy wall, and the poor soul, driven to and fro between two equal terrors, found the one relief that was possible to it, the relief of unconsciousness. Alas! That relief seems to end the moment it has begun. It seemed to Hetty as if those dozen dreams had only passed into another dream, that she was in the hovel, and her aunt was standing over her with a candle in her hand. She trembled under her aunt's glance, and opened her eyes. There was no candle, but there was light in the hovel, the light of early morning through the open door. And there was a face looking down on her, but it was an unknown face, belonging to an elderly man in a smock frock. "Why, what do you do here, young woman?" the man said roughly. Hetty trembled still worse under this real fear and shame than she had done in her momentary dream under her aunt's glance. She felt that she was like a beggar already found sleeping in that place. But in spite of her trembling, she was so eager to account to the man for her presence here, that she found words at once. "I lost my way," she said. "I'm traveling northward, and I got away from the road into the fields, and was overtaken by the dark. Will you tell me the way to the nearest village?" She got up as she was speaking, and put her hands to her bonnet to adjust it, and then laid hold of her basket. The man looked at her with a slow bovine gaze, without giving her any answer, for some seconds. Then he turned away, and walked towards the door of the hovel, but it was not till he got there that he stood still, and, turning his shoulder half round towards her, said, "Ah, I can show you the way to Norton, if you like. But what do you do getting out o' the high road?" he added, with a tone of gruff reproof. "I'll be getting into mischief, if you don't mind." "Yes," said Hetty, "I won't do it again. I'll keep in the road, if you'll be so good as show me how to get to it." "Why don't you keep where there's a finger posts and folks to ax the way on?" the man said, still more gruffly. "Nobody 'ud think you was a wild woman, and look at the air." Hetty was frightened at this gruff old man, and still more at this last suggestion, that she looked like a wild woman. As she followed him out of the hovel, she thought she would give him a sixpence for telling her the way, and then he would not suppose she was wild. As he stopped to point out the road to her, she put her hand in her pocket to get the sixpence ready, and when he was turning away, without saying good morning, she held it out to him and said, "Thank you. Will you please to take something for your trouble?" He looked slowly at the sixpence, and then said, "I want none o' your money. You'd better take care on't, else you'll get it stole from the air, if you go trapezing about the fields like a mad woman a that way." The man left her without further speech, and Hetty held on her way. Another day had risen, and she must wander on. It was no use. To think of drowning herself, she could not do it, at least while he had money left to buy food and strength to journey on. But the incident on her waking this morning heightened her dread of that time, when her money would be all gone. She would have to sell her basket and clothes then, and she would really look like a beggar or a wild woman, as the man had said. The passionate joy in life as he had felt in the night, after escaping from the brink of the black cold death in the pool, was gone now. Life now, by the morning light, with the impression of that man's hard wondering look at her, was as full of dread as death it was worse. It was a dread to which she felt chained, from which she shrank and shrank as she did from the black pool, and yet could find no refuge from it. She took out her money from her purse, and looked at it. As he had still 2 and 20 shillings, it would serve her for many days more, or it would help her to get on faster to Stonyshire, within reach of Dinah. The thought of Dinah urged itself more strongly now, since the experience of the night had driven her shuddering imagination away from the pool. If it had been only going to Dinah, if nobody besides Dinah would ever know, Hetty could have made up her mind to go to her. The soft voice, the pitying eyes, would have drawn her. But afterwards the other people must know, and she could no more rush on that shame than she could rush on death. She must wander on, and wait for a lower depth of despair to give her courage. Perhaps death would come to her, for she was getting less and less able to bear the day's weariness. And yet such is the strange action of our souls, drawing us by a lurking desire towards the very ends we dread, Hetty, when she set out again from Norton, asked the straightest road northwards towards Stonyshire, and kept it all that day. Poor wandering Hetty, with the rounded childish face and the hard, unloving, despairing soul looking out of it with the narrow heart and narrow thoughts, no room in them for any sorrows but her own, and tasting that sorrow with the more intense bitterness. My heart bleeds for her as I see her toiling along on her weary feet, or seated in a cart, with her eyes fixed vacantly on the road before her, never thinking or caring whither it tends, till hunger comes and makes her desire that a village may be near. What will be the end of her objectless wandering, apart from all love, caring for human beings only through her pride, clinging to life only as the hunted wounded brute clings to it. God preserve you and me from being the beginners of such misery. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.